Before we start this episode of CFD's Podcast for Good, let's give a little shout out to our presenting sponsor, WSECU. WSECU has been a part of the community since 1957 and has been supporting the CFD in a big way since 2011. Thanks to them, we were able to bring you spectacular events and promotions like the Masquerade Ball, Golf for Veterans Tournament, and our incredible First Week to Give, which has been responsible for raising tens of thousands of dollars in donations to charities throughout our community. For more on how WSECU serves charities throughout our community, visit www.wsecu.org/community. And of course, visit our website to find out more about our incredible partnership with WSECU. And now, here's the show.
I can't believe the venue we're in here. This is nice. This is way better than our usual spot.
We should do this up more often. I should get this in front of my face.
Yeah, you should get it in front of your face. No one can hear you.
No one can hear you.
They're gonna be like, I think Heather's back.
Yeah, maybe.
But I couldn't hear her because she was on the other side of the room.
Yeah, because she didn't have the mic in front of her face.
That's right.
Not professional.
Not profesh.
Yeah.
Not I at like all. To shorten professional. To
Don't
profesh.
Say that ever again.
Okay. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Season 3, Episode 9. My name is Philip Kerrigan. I am the program manager of the Washington State Combined Fund Drive. I am the co-host of Podcasts for Good. I am joined for the first time in half a decade by my co-host. Please say your name.
My name is Heather Lucas. I'm glad to be back.
We are glad to have you
Thanks.
Back. We are glad to have you
Did
back.
Did it sound, for a second after I said that, I realized it probably didn't sound like I'm glad.
My name is Heather, and I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, super happy to be here. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, it is really nice of you to have the podcast in Secretary Wyman's office
yes.
instead of our standard conference
I know,
room.
I know.
This is a way to be welcome back.
Yeah, you people can't see it, yeah. but we got displaced.
Yes.
We got booted out of the conference room.
Yes.
But in a weird way, we got upgraded to like the hospitality suite.
Yeah, we did.
We are in Secretary Wyman's office. She is not here, for the record.
That would be weird if she was
I know,
just
she was sitting
desk,
right at their desk
just
doing
being,
work.
Like, shaking her head, being like, what are you doing?
Doing paperwork while we're over here.
Clickety-clack, clickety-clack.
Yeah.
There goes the computer.
No, she was out of the office, so we got a chance to use her very glorious, huge office space. We impressed the crap out of our guest
yeah.
with this space.
Yeah.
I think she probably thinks that this is where we work.
Yeah.
And that is not actually true.
We should just work here right
we'll
now.
We'll just, yeah. Secretary, we're going to set up a little computer in here.
You can be on your side of the room. We'll be on ours.
Before we continue, I want to give a little bit of a shout out to my fill-in guest, Kaylin. She did a good job. Good job, Kaylin. And we were happy to have you on. She asked good hard questions.
Yeah.
She was good. She was good. It is good to have you back though, Ms. Lucas.
Thank you
for coming back.
You're welcome. Yeah. You're welcome.
Thank you for not quitting.
Oh, you're welcome. I didn't expect to be gone so long.
I know. It's crazy. Today we're going to talk about a relatively deep subject. The engaging communities around foster care is basically the subject matter. And the minute folks hear the words foster care, their immediate reaction is, a little bit. Because there's a lot of unpacking there. There's a lot of, like, both myth and fact associated with foster care. Some of it is good news and some of it is bad news. So we did a little bit of that unpacking with Sarah Desjarlais.
Desjarlais. Yeah.
Yeah, I had it the first time.
You did.
Sarah Desjarlais. She's the executive director of Office Moms and Dad, this really neat organization that goes to basically CPS facilities.
Yeah,
and
offices.
And while this child who's gone through incredible trauma is being processed through to foster care or found another place, they were pulled from a house that had like a domestic violence situation or something like that. And they're sitting there waiting up to 8 hours, as Sarah said.
Yeah.
these folks come in and they take care of the child. They even clothe the child if they have to. They feed them. They play games with them. They make them feel comfortable so that that initial sort of jarring moment where you're pulled from the home maybe isn't as bad as it could be.
Yeah.
Right. So a very noble mission. And then, of course, it's geared toward folks who are really kind of hoping to become foster care parents themselves, it sounded like.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a transitional, like, is this, does this work for you sort of thing. This is very neat.
Yeah, like she had mentioned in the interview, being able to step from, instead of just diving straight into foster care and being like, I am doing this thing, it's massive, it's huge, it's intimidating. Mm-hmm. You get to kind of see what's happening behind the scenes and interact with kids, but you don't have to commit 100% right away to the fact that you're going to be the home for somebody.
Right, right. It's like the equivalent of being like the uncle, right? You get to play with the kid and then give it back.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of what they get to do. They get to experience foster care, what it might be like, like a taste of it. And then if they like it, they
can
become foster parents, which sounds like a crazy process to be a part of.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Before we actually dive into the interview with Sarah, we have the person who actually asked the question of the pod back.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to see exactly what you mean by this particular question of the pod. Can you hit me with the question of the pod, Ms. Lucas?
It's funny. Like a couple weeks ago. Half a lifetime ago when I asked a question on the pod and I was like, you know, I don't remember how I got from point A to point G on this question. This is one of those kind of questions where I went through like a couple different like A to B to D, maybe back to C. Okay, now I've got my question.
Yeah.
So I was reading an article on Office Moms and Dads website called A Redacted History. And I think Sarah wrote it. I'll just double check with her, but I'm going to give her credit.
Great.
But it's on their website and I'll post that. And one of the things that they were talking about in there is like some of the stuff that they work with, you know, like how to like be a first responder to these kids in these moments. But it kind of made me think like, okay, well, you can't say to a kid, you know, I know exactly where you're going to sleep tonight.
Yeah.
The answer is more like, I don't know.
Yeah.
So what kind of an answer to you, if you're encountered with a situation.
Right.
When you hear the answer, I don't know.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
End of story. What does that invoke in you?
Yeah. Well, so as an adult, the answer, I don't know.
Yeah.
To a question can be pretty frustrating.
Yeah.
Depending on the person who told me I don't know, can also be eye rolling where you're a little bit like, really? Did you even look into it?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Right. I do feel like that answer for a kid, like I don't know.
If a kid gives you that answer, or if you
A kid gives me that answer, then I know he knows and he's lying to me.
Ah, nice.
Right. Like, I don't know what happened.
You're calling out someone specific?
I am. I'm calling out all three of my children.
I was going to say, it sounds more like a John thing.
Well, for sure, John is the one. Thomas did it. Like, there is two answers. I don't know who did it. Well, that means you did it.
Yeah.
But if you know for sure Thomas did it, you're like, Thomas did it. Definitely it's on him.
Yeah.
But for a kid, you know, I mean, my kids don't have the trauma of foster care and abuse and those sort of things. So when a kid asks a question and their parent says, I don't know, in a weird way, it does offer up credibility to that adult in a weird way, because kids naturally think that their parents have all the answers to everything. And it might be our inclination as parents to go ahead and tell a white lie about a certain situation because it's easier to do that than to like say, I don't know. And then it leads to another line of questioning.
Yeah.
But it is better, I think, for you as an adult to tell the kid that you don't know.
Yeah.
Right. And it makes the kid feel like the adult's being honest with them, like, oh, he doesn't know.
Mm-hmm.
In these situations with these kids, I mean, I can't imagine that there is a social worker or foster parent out there that wants to deliver I don't know to these kids.
Yeah.
That cannot be something they want to do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
What about you? When you hear the words I don't know, I feel like I know the answer to this question.
Out of my mouth?
But I'd like to hear how you react when somebody says, I don't know, to a question.
So, like you said, it does depend on the party it's coming from.
Yes.
if it's somebody who I'm like, I work with and, or I work with closer than I do with like a different agency or a different outside entity. I'm always just like, come on, man.
I know.
With me here. Maybe you don't know, but the answer to me should be, I don't know, but I'll find out.
Yes, of course.
Like, I find that is
people
is a
miss
good answer.
Half that sentence.
Yeah. Yeah. you gotta put that little last part.
Yes, they do.
But I'll find out.
Yeah.
Or I'll look into it. You know, something
right.
If you don't know something, okay, now that leaves two of us who don't know something.
Right.
Somebody's gotta figure this out.
Yeah.
So let's figure it out.
Yeah.
I think that's a better answer than I just flat out, I don't know.
Right. The toughest part to me is when somebody's like, I don't know. And then there's silence. And you're like, this is just hanging out there now that you just don't know.
Yeah.
Are you going to do anything about that?
Exactly. Yeah. And sometimes when it comes to, I don't know, situations, you're just like, all right, so why am I going to rely on anything you say in the future? Mm-hmm. Clearly you didn't know the answer to this. So what else don't you know?
One of the most horrifying things that happens, because we do lots of fundraising events and stuff, are when somebody asks the question and it's a very important question, like, where's the cash?
Yeah.
And everybody goes, I don't know.
That's not the answer.
Those are bad times. Those are bad times. Yeah. So, no, I don't know is not a great answer for adults.
It's not the best answer. No. Yeah,
no, but
it's,
I mean,
frustrating.
Yeah. I think, as, and for kids who are in foster care, that answer has got to be really tough for them to hear.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, like, I think the kids do appreciate the honesty, mm-hmm. you know, the adult does typically, when they're talking to kids, say something like, I don't know, but I'll find out, I promise.
Yeah.
That adds credibility. I don't know why we lose that as we get older as adults.
Yeah.
When we're talking to other adults. Like,
I feel like that's also an end to a conversation. I don't know.
I think some people use it that way. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. When I was younger, I remember someone who was like, as I started the workforce, someone who was on the verge of retirement was like, I dislike the word whatever, because whatever ends a conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was like, you know, I can kind of see that.
Whatever, old man.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I can kind of see that, but I feel like I don't know ends a conversation quicker.
Oh, yeah, 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 for sure. I mean, well, and especially if the person's not willing to elaborate on their I don't know.
Yeah.
They're just, when they say I don't know to you, you kind of feel like, oh, so you're brushing me off.
Yeah. Like, should I shake you and scream, why don't you know? What are we doing here?
I know. Yeah. I know. This has been like the old man with soup hour. Like, get off my lawn,
yeah,
kids.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you're welcome.
Oh, man. The questions of the pods are always better with Ms. Lucas. Okay. Because my questions were not great. So without further ado, we're going to toss it over to Sarah Desjarlais, the executive director of Office Moms and Dads. Here is that interview. Okay, so we are here with Sarah Desjarlais. She is the executive director of Office Moms and Dads. Sarah, thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me. This is exciting.
Awesome. So we start off with a really simple question. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit of history about the organization and what it is that you guys do for the community?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so Office Moms and Dads was founded by myself and a social worker 5.5 years ago in Vancouver, Washington. So that's Clark County. It was a result of so I was a foster parent at the time, and I was just in the child welfare office for a meeting, just standard meeting. And I saw kids running around. I saw kids sitting by themselves, just kind of sinking into their chair. I saw social workers frantically hard at work trying mm-hmm. to find placements for these kiddos that were running around the office. And I realized that this was not a nurturing environment for kids who have just undergone trauma.
Yeah.
So my mommy heart just kind of broke. And I said, I mean, I had 4 kids at home.
Oh, wow.
Some of them were foster placements. And I said, I can do something about this.
Sure, sure.
So even though my job at the time was changing diapers, I thought, we're going to make something of this. And I just got a handful of people behind me, and it just kind of blew up. because the need was so great. The need for childcare in child welfare offices is huge, and it's real, and it is at every single child welfare office in this state and beyond.
Yeah.
And so I simply asked the question, what would happen if community members came in and did childcare?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer was, well, nobody's ever asked that before. Okay, sure, yeah. Let's try it. So we tried it, and you know, we kind of developed policies and procedures as we went, and it just grew and grew and grew. Mm-hmm. And what happened, like the way it spread, because we never meant it to scale. We just did it for our own office, is word of mouth. So our social workers started talking to each other and said, you need this program. Let's figure out how to duplicate it. So up the I-5 corridor it went.
Okay.
And now we're east, and now we're actually into Idaho.
Wow. Really? So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. So where did you get your start?
Right in Vancouver.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And then it's all up and down now?
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing.
We have 22 locations.
Wow. Wow. Excellent. That's cool.
Thanks.
And the locations itself, like that's why your office, Moms and Dads, because you're in offices.
Yeah, yeah. So we don't actually have any buildings to our name. We are completely mobile.
That is really cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's relevant for today's culture because everything we can do online, we do everything through our cell phones.
Yeah.
We have video conferences if we need to talk to team members. And we really have no, capital because we don't have a building to maintain. So that makes our funds go directly to the mission.
That's excellent. Nice. Yeah. Wow. That's pretty cool.
Thanks.
Yeah. You are a researcher, so you got this next question.
Yeah, the next question. All right. So in doing research for the podcast, I was on your website and I saw that you could have staff positions that are called hub leaders.
Yeah.
And that the hub leaders, they cover Southwest Washington, Treasure Valley, Idaho, Snohomish, and Shelton. Mm-hmm. Is there a greater need for your service in those areas?
Yeah. Actually, we have more hub leaders. They're just not listed on our website yet. Yeah. So we have one in Seattle. We have one all the way up in Bellingham. And then we have one in Snohomish County. Okay. So there were three that were missing on that. So I would say the need is great in all of those areas. Mm-hmm. At this moment, the need is greatest in like the Pierce County area. Mm. We need volunteers. We need leaders in that area. We need people that will speak into the community there. Mm-hmm. So Pierce County and then east too. We'd really, really like to start focusing some efforts in going east. So we have a location in Wenatchee. Mm-hmm. We have a location in Walla Walla.
Yeah.
But we'd really like to get to Clarkston. We'd like to get to Tri-Cities. And then Spokane and up in that area too would be great.
You kind of mentioned Pierce County, which of course has some areas that are fairly depressed. It kind of leads me to this question about is there a common denominator to the kids you see come into foster care? Are there some commonalities to those kids? Do you see a trend? Like, do they come from poor households, or is a lot of it like domestic violence situations? What have you noticed in terms of the kids who enter?
So kids who are removed by CPS, it has to be some sort of founded abuse or neglect.
Okay.
So obviously abuse is a pretty obvious one. There's going to be marks, right? That's often reported by teachers. Sunday school teachers, like people who, you know, are mandatory reporters who work with kids. Neglect, however, can take on a lot of forms. And we see neglect cases even from upper income families.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So abuse and neglect really is not discriminatory.
Wow. Wow. Go ahead.
So when you talked earlier about like wanting to expand into other areas and places, what is it that you're looking for volunteers to do in those spaces?
Yeah. Okay. So what our volunteers do is, and this is across the board, we are on call. So if the CPS unit of child welfare know that they're going to go out and remove a kid or children, they call our volunteer coordinator, actually text, and then the volunteer coordinator texts all of our volunteers on her roster or his roster, and whoever can make it comes in. So it's really spur of the moment.
Yeah.
We usually have very little notice. Sometimes they give us a day or two to find a volunteer. It's just go, go, go. And we come to the office and we present a calm demeanor.
Yeah.
We have our aprons that have our logo on it so that we're identifiable as the volunteer. Mm-hmm. And we just sit with these kids who have just been removed from trauma.
Right.
We provide, or we make sure that they have clean clothes, that they have luggage to put their stuff in, that they have snacks to fill their bellies. Mm-hmm. We're a companion for them to keep them out of trouble, to free their social worker to do the really, really hard job of finding a placement for them, a place to go that night. And then also the court papers that they have, the social workers have to fill out so many court documents to make everything above board, obviously, and do it right. And so we just, we sit and we play and we wipe tears and we watch movies and just, and do the good things for these kids while they wait.
How long typically is a visit, and do you guys get to see those kids again?
Ah, okay. Here comes the heartbreak part.
Yeah.
Our visits can be anywhere from 1 hour to 8 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And when a shift is going over 2 hours, we try to get more volunteers in, so they take turns. And sometimes, actually more often than we'd like, these kids come back.
Oh, wow.
So they will go to what we call an emergent placement for the night, or a temporary house, and they'll just spend the night. And then they'll come back to the office to wait for the next day.
Yeah.
And we'll, so we try to get the same volunteer back in there so that they have some continuity.
Yeah.
And that helps build trust back with these kids. But after they go to their permanent foster home or relative's home, we don't see them again.
And
that is really hard for our volunteers.
Right, because I'm sure they connect.
They want to know the end story, but we don't get to know that. So we train them. We tell them, you know, you're going to get heartbroken. Prepare yourself.
Right.
But we always say we're very happy to lose volunteers to you getting your foster license. That's one of the byproducts of this program, is that people who are interested in foster care but not quite ready to take the full step, they can get their feet wet in this and then kind of decide if this is right for them. Yeah. And we love losing volunteers to the licensing department.
Do you think that there are stigmas for foster kids and foster parents? And what kind of stigmas do you see?
Okay. Right off the top of my head, a stigma that we see is that foster kids are badly behaved, dirty, that somehow their behaviors are their fault, that it's their choice to behave this way. Because we see a lot of big behaviors.
A
lot of big behaviors. And that's just simply not true. So they are acting in a way that their brains are telling them to act and it's a fight or flight or freeze situation. And so if they throw a chair against a wall, it's because they've been through trauma and their brains are just trying to figure out how to deal with it. So, again, we try to educate our volunteers. Like, you might see some really big behaviors. If so, don't try to discipline. Don't try to deal with it yourself. Go get your social worker, get a state worker and get some help, you know? Yeah. So we never try to tackle those behaviors ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty intense.
Yeah, it is.
You said that, you know, you love losing people to the licensing to become foster parents.
Yeah.
So, like, in your experience, what kind of barriers are people really facing as they're trying to become foster parents?
Oh, okay. That's a good question. Now, I must precurse that with, I became a foster parent 9.5 years ago. And so it's changed a little bit since I went through the process. But from friends who have gone through it recently, I can say that one of the largest barriers to people becoming licensed foster caregivers is the length of time that it takes for the department to process their license and the hoops that they have to jump through to get that license. Now, a lot of the processes are good, and they're to thoroughly vet the family, which is awesome.
Yeah.
We need those safeguards. But I mean, there was a while, and I don't know what the time frame is now, but there was a while where it would take 10 months to get your packet in, your complete packet in, by the time they finally did your home study and interview and gave you a license.
Yeah.
And during that time, people get disenchanted.
Sure.
You know, they lose their energy and their momentum to help these kids, and they're going to go find another way to invest in their community if it takes that long to process a license.
Yeah.
Again, I don't know if it's that way today, but I do know that the delay is a huge challenge for people.
Well, what kind of, like, delay issues? Like, is it just the fact that there's so much paperwork and they have to rely on so many different, like, departments and agencies to get that through, or?
I would say it's bureaucracy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're familiar with that.
Yeah, yeah. No, we know that world. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guarantee you the folks at DSHS who probably work on these cases and Department of Children, Youth, and Family Services probably think the same thing.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. I know.
Mm-hmm. You know, because they are out there, they see it, and they want to help, but they know that they've got to go through these avenues.
Right, and I'm glad you brought that up because one of the things that also is a wonderful byproduct of this program is that we're getting community members through the doors at DCYF so that they can put names and faces to the social workers and to the licensors, to the supervisors. So
It builds like a good relationship and you kind of know that you're not going to kind of go off on this random person. Right.
Because in the media, so many times our child welfare workers are kind of demonized and or villainized, I guess would be a better word. And that's simply not the case most of the time. Yeah. Most of the time it's this and this and this and this that's happening behind the scenes. And we never get a chance to see that. But if we're in the doors helping kids, we actually do get a chance to grow some empathy for what's going on behind the scenes.
Right. As a foster parent yourself, how long do kids normally end up in one house? And how hard is it not to get attached to that child when they're in foster care?
Yeah, you have to get attached to that child. If you don't get attached to that child, you're doing him a disservice.
Yeah,
because you're teaching him how to love and how to reattach to a grown up. Mm-hmm. Because he's obviously been through something that broke trust, and so you have to give 110% of yourself and your family, your kids, your spouse, like who, or your partner, whoever. You're basically all agreeing to sacrifice yourselves for the sake of this child's healing.
Yeah.
Now, I will say that the average time in foster care from birth to adoption or back home is 3 years.
Mm.
That's for babies.
Wow.
And babies are easy to place.
Yeah. Yeah.
For teens, forget it.
Yeah.
They're going to be, they might as well just be in the system until they age out.
Until they're 18.
18 or I believe it's, I want to say 26.
Oh, okay.
24.
Okay.
So a couple years ago, a new law was passed extending the option of foster care. So at 18, they get the option of staying in.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And a lot of them choose that because it's their safety net.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So they continue to get their health care. They get help with college. There's a lot of benefits to staying in. And I think it's been good, that law and that extension.
Yeah, I can imagine like being 18, you're supposed to decide, okay, where am I going to go to college? What am I going to do with the rest of my life?
Right.
So having that discussion and those thoughts.
Right.
And then top that with, well, where am I going to live?
Yeah. And now you're on your own.
Yeah.
And it really, it sets them up for failure if they just get dumped out.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the stay in foster care is unfortunately much, much longer than it is ideal.
Yeah. Yeah. Almost sounds like for some, it's like a de facto adoption almost.
Yeah.
It ends up being like they stay in that house for a long period of time.
Right. Yeah. It's tricky.
Yeah.
It's so complicated because a lot of foster parents don't set out to adopt.
Right. Right.
They're not in it for that. They just want to help in the short term, you know, and carry the kid until they are able to.
Until they're able to be adopted.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So you also said something about like being like going back to the home. Like it's like 3 years. So kids end up going back to the place where they were like either abandoned or neglected or abused.
That's actually the goal.
Okay.
Yeah. So the state is mandated to try to get these kids back home, if not with their bio families, with their, you know, a relative.
Okay.
Because it's so, so, so important to keep those family ties. Even if there was hurt initially, that hurt can heal. The hope is that we can get the parents healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to take classes. They have to do parenting stuff. They have to prove that they're able to care for this child before they get them back. And it's a long road for some. Some of them are really, really motivated. They want their kids back.
Mm-hmm.
They love them.
Yeah.
And it's true. Even in the worst abuse and neglect cases, the parents love their kids. It's just in us. Like, that's how we were made to be. We want our kids. But so often there's mental health issues. Mm-hmm. There's addiction issues, you know. And that prevent them from living their best life. So we want to, you know, as a community, we need to, again, have empathy mm-hmm. For these families who maybe something really bad happened to them when they were a kid. And yeah. this is yeah. why they are the way they are. But at the same time, walking that fine line of being fiercely protective of our kids, yeah. of our community kids, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So let's say somebody hears the podcast mm-hmm. and they want to start giving to Office Moms and Dads.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about, you mentioned a little bit about a ton of the money goes to the services directly. Right. Can mm-hmm. you talk a little bit about what those donations do for you?
Yeah. Okay. So 100% of our funding goes to the mission. And we just launched a monthly giving campaign. It's called the Pinky Promise Society uh-huh. because we're asking donors to pinky promise that they will walk with us every month for a year or more. And then we in turn pinky promise that we're going to be transparent. Mm-hmm. We're going to tell you how your money is being spent. Mm-hmm. We're going to show you the good work that your money is doing. Mm-hmm. So for example, like $10 a month can give a feed a sibling group of three while they wait in an
office.
That's
awesome.
So we give them granola bars and juice boxes and, you know, mm-hmm. snacky type stuff. And so it's so simple. $10 a month. That's it.
Yeah.
$50 a month completely outfits a kid head to toe with a coat, shoes, everything.
Cool.
And a lot of our offices leverage that money with community programs that are already in place. So we love collaborating.
Yeah.
We're all about collaboration. We don't want to reinvent the wheel where there's good stuff happening. So if we go into a new site, we're going to try to figure out what's already happening in that community and leverage it with our resources.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're doing the best that we can to just steward our donors and the sacrifices that they're making as
Excellent.
Yeah. And you can go on our website. Mm-hmm. It's just officemomsanddads.com. And we have a donate page. You can join our Pinky Promise Society or just do a one-time donation. We also have a big event coming up. Do you want me to talk about
that? Oh, that was her question.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's actually going to be in Vancouver in Clark County uh-huh. on June 21st, which is the longest day of the year.
Yes.
It's called the Summer Solstice Soiree. And it's going to be kind of a swanky gala style fundraising event. And the whole like idea behind it is that we help kids on their longest day of their lives.
Yeah.
Right.
That's cool.
When we come in.
I like that.
And so on the longest day of the year, we want to get together and raise funds to help these kids.
Very nice.
That's cool. Yeah, I like that.
Thanks.
That's awesome. Well, Sarah, we want to thank you very much for coming on to mm-hmm. the podcast, talking a little bit about Office Moms and Dads and the very important work that you're doing for these kids. So thank you very much.
Thanks so much. This is good.
Okay, and that was our very interesting interview with Sarah. Really, really noble work that she's doing with her group of folks, with Office Moms and Dads. Really neat how they move from place to place. They're entirely mobile.
Yeah, that's
brilliant
cool.
idea.
That's really smart in this day and age.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
don't tie yourself down if you don't have to.
Yeah, that literally means you can be anywhere.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
Yeah, really rethinking the idea of what it means to be a nonprofit. You don't have to have a physical location.
Yeah.
And you can communicate via social media and text.
Yeah, the text thing. That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Super cool.
Yeah, utilizing technology and your mobility, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Before we leave, you have some facts and figures. Now, I tried to pull this off with the senior community thing. I had some mild success. So let's see how a professional actually brings real facts and figures.
Look at that.
No pressure.
This is a bar that I have to reach now, apparently. All right. So in doing research, that's, you know, the main where you get your facts and figures.
I understand.
From.
Yeah. Okay. That part I get.
Okay, good.
The research part.
Good deal.
I did none of that, but yes.
Oh. So I was looking up stuff for Washington State and for, you know, nationwide stats. And I found some like this thing called 43 gut-wrenching foster care statistics.
Oh, good Lord.
I know.
You already got yourself a real feel-good article.
Yeah.
There.
You want to cry? Do you feel like crying already?
Yeah. Let's hear it.
All right. So per the Adoption and Foster Care Analysis and Reporting System, this is where some of this stuff comes from. There's just a bunch of stats about it. So about foster care and like how kids fare in the system.
Okay.
So boys are more likely to enter foster care than girls.
Oh, wow.
So it's not like a big
difference?
Yeah, it's like 52%, 48%
okay.
kind of thing.
Okay.
So, but boys are more likely to enter foster care. Of parents, single mothers are 8.5 times more likely to adopt a child from the foster care system compared to single fathers.
Oh,
and
wow.
it's a big difference there. 26% of placements versus 3%.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That,
could
that,
you imagine being a single father?
No, and I then, could not imagine being a single father. Yeah. And I really, really don't think, unfortunately, I think I'd probably be in the larger number for the men. Like, I don't know that I would want to take that leap.
Yeah.
Without a companion of some yeah. kind. That'd be hard.
Yeah, I'm yeah. sure, like, as a single father, too, or just, like, a single guy, I mean, mm-hmm. were you really eating many nutritious meals, or were they mostly
no,
hostess-based?
No, I mean, look, I know how I know how I supervise my children. It would not be good for me to be the lone provider yeah. for 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, something that Sarah mentioned in the interview was about, or after our interview, actually, we were talking mm-hmm. with her, and she was saying that there's a stipulation that Native American children
yeah.
Have to be replaced with people who have Native American heritage.
That's right, yeah.
So, that used to be a thing where every race, if you are Black,
mm-hmm.
you would get
placed with mostly Black families.
Exactly.
Wow.
So, African-American or Black children are less likely to be adopted, even though they make up 24% of the children who enter foster care
wow.
in an average fiscal year.
Wow.
So they make up a larger portion.
Yeah.
But then
they're not getting adopted.
Part of that rule change made it so that they could go to anyone who was available and suited their needs. Because it used to be like you had to wait for someone who was of the same race.
Wow.
But now they don't have to wait for that, so they can get yeah. adopted even quicker
cool.
or put into foster care quicker.
Cool.
Fewer than 3% of children in foster care will go on to earn a college degree.
Wow. Did you say fewer than 3?
Yeah.
Oh,
that's
my
terrible.
Gosh. That's sad.
And another stat that kind of goes along that is that 71% of young women who age out of the foster care system will become pregnant by age 21.
Oh, man.
So
that is gut-wrenching.
Yeah.
That did live up to the name.
It did, yeah.
Oh, man.
And 25% of kids in foster care will experience PTSD.
Well, that does make sense.
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, some of this stuff is, like, it's gut-wrenching. It does make sense.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, what do you do to
yeah.
stop that? Like,
I know.
Like,
I know.
When Sarah talked about not aging out at 18,
mm-hmm.
like, that would definitely
help. For sure, I think, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, could you imagine
no.
like, when you were 18 just being like, oh, now I have to get a job and
yeah.
find a place to live and
agreed.
I don't have the resources to do that?
Agreed.
That'd be madness.
Yeah, no, that would be a lot.
Yeah. And then there's a thing that's happening in our state, which is very strange. I didn't know about this at all, but there are reports and articles out there about placement in hotels. So the Office of the Family and Children's Ombudsman.
Okay.
Strange word.
Yes.
I know. Say it 3 times fast. They do this annual report.
Uh-huh.
And they came to conclusions that between September 2017 and August 2018,
uh-huh.
There were a lot of children spending nights in hotels
uh-huh.
instead of in an actual home.
Uh-huh.
So 195 children spent more than 1,000 nights in hotels uh-huh. or in child welfare field offices.
Wow.
Yeah. So, like, this is just something that the youth are in the hotels. They're disproportionately children of color.
Okay.
They tend to be older, like in the teenage years,
uh-huh.
and they often have significant mental health or behavioral needs, so they need more care. But when they come into an office to be placed somewhere, that care is not available.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
they're being put into a hotel.
Wow.
Until a foster care situation can be provided.
Wow.
It's crazy, right?
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, I didn't know that was happening in our state.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then our state also, our state's foster care system has more children in the system than they do qualified families.
Yeah.
It's about 2-1 there. So,
wow.
And it's gone up. So in 2012, like, it started rising more and more and more for the children in the system, but
mm-hmm.
also going down for the families who
wow.
are available.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's probably also an issue where, you know, you have some kids being like, especially if they're getting close to being aged out of a system,
mm-hmm.
that contributes to other problems that we see in our area, like homelessness.
Yep. Absolutely. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
There's some grim, grim statistics. That frankly, we all have to look at
these are real things. This is a real issue. And
yeah.
again, it's foster care is one of those things that can be really kind of, it's not just segmented
yeah.
and boxed into one box.
That's right.
Like, you
I mean,
have
yeah.
mental health issues,
yeah.
you have drug issues, you have homelessness issues. And then, you know, how does a foster care kid go from certain situations to becoming a healthy, functional adult?
Right. Right.
You got to figure out how to do that.
Yep. Yeah. That's and kudos to places like Office Moms and Dads for giving it a try.
Yeah, absolutely.
For trying to engage. I also have to say, we might as well do it. A big shout out to our DSHS and DCYF frontline employees who see this sort of stuff every day.
Yeah.
You talk to some of them, and you hear the heartbreak when they talk about what they see with these kids coming in. You know, just remind you it's okay to be angry at the system.
Yeah.
But the folks who are working in it are working hard. Mm-hmm. They don't make a ton of money to do this work.
Yeah.
And they oftentimes get attached to what they see. So shout out to those folks who do that pretty noble work. And it's nice to see Office Moms and Dads, a nonprofit, working with frontline employees.
Absolutely.
It's pretty cool.
Because, there's definitely going to be trauma on both sides. You don't ever think, oh, this person at DCYF is really experiencing heartbreak and trauma at seeing these situations or experiencing this.
Absolutely. I mean, a lot of them really have a tough time with it. They find themselves shocked by what they see, and then they can't really process it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, kudos to them. So that was this week's podcast with Office Moms and Dads. We want to remind you of some upcoming events. We just had the Thurston County recognition event. It was a fun time had by all.
Yeah.
We have the Spokane recognition event coming up on
By this time all three of them are done.
Oh. All right. Well, let's try that again.
Yeah.
Okay, well, so that's the show. Thank you very much to Sarah from Office Moms and Dads coming on the podcast and talking a little bit about a very serious, very sobering issue. Hopefully, some good work can be done on that front.
Absolutely.
To kind of hit on some events that happened, we just had essentially all of our recognition events, with the exception of King County.
Yeah.
Snow King, if you
Snow
will.
King,
Snohomish
absolutely.
King.
Yeah.
It always reminds me, to totally digress, of the episode with Homer where he buys a snowplow.
The Plow King.
Yeah.
I always think of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and like the Ice King.
That's funny, right?
Of,
So
we're on the same page here.
Yeah. We don't think of Snohomish King.
We don't think of County. We think of crazy animation.
I think of crazy animation characters. Yeah. But that is that is going on tomorrow. It is a Hawaiian theme, so we'll see a lot of you folks there. The big one that's upcoming, of course, is the Well-Fed, Well-Read promotion that starts on April 1st and runs through April 12th. It'll be out in Spokane. So those of you who might be listening from Spokane, it's out there. And then here... in Olympia, thousands of books, thousands of pounds of food are brought in for local charities. So that's really neat. And then a little bit down the road, we're going to have our leadership breakfast on May 9th. We are really pumped for how that's coming together.
Yeah.
We have some pretty amazing speakers. We actually will have a podcast that will actually talk to some of these speakers.
Yeah.
So that'll be really neat. You'll get a more in-depth look at what these folks do and what their experiences are.
Yeah, whether or not you can be there, you can definitely hear what they have to say.
You can still hear what they have to say. Mm-hmm. Pretty inspirational stuff. So that was this week's podcast. Thank you so much to Heather for coming back.
I might not do it in the future. I'm just saying.
Kaylin!
Next time you're on your own.
On my own. That was a sad podcast, by the way. So thank you everybody for listening. Thank you to Kaylin for holding it down while Heather was gone.
Thank you, Kaylin.
And thank everybody out there. We'll see you later.
Bye.